Hey guys, welcome everyone to episode 25 of New Ones at Noon, aka the Dropout Radio New Music Mondays podcast. This show airs on Dropout Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and is available as a podcast anywhere you can access podcast land. I think that's in iCloud City. That was terrible. Nothing is off the table anymore, everyone. I want to know if you guys have heard the news about the former head of the Israeli space program. A very, very well-respected scientist has said not only do aliens exist, but there's a whole galactic federation situation going on, and humanity just needs to chill out, get its shit together, and well, I don't really know what would come next, to be honest, but whatever it is, I'm down. Maybe this news will motivate us just to get the planet cleaned up and, you know, stop killing each other and stuff. You know, like how when you furiously clean your apartment because you know company is coming over? God, remember when company was coming over? We have a kick-ass show lined up for you today. We've got new music from Coleman Hell, which is pretty exciting. I get a chance to sit down and chat with Luke from the Dirty Nil, so we'll listen to that too. I actually asked him about the Galactic Federation, because you know, as ridiculous as it sounds, who are we to question a whole federation? The universe is a big place, and you never know. Just ask the first artist that we're gonna look at today, an incredibly talented artist named Ray Stern. Ray Stern, aka The Universe, featuring Ray, is a singer-songwriter from Chatham-Kent, Ontario, Canada. Stern started playing music at the age of 15 and received a Toronto Indie Music Award at the age of 18 for her success in the band The Peace Leeches. The band opened for some big names, such as The Trues, Finger Eleven, Sloan, and Arkells. Stern didn't have much choice but to get on board and get used to being in front of those big crowds. Ray Stern now resides in London, Ontario, making music under her moniker, The Universe Featuring Ray. Her new album is called Co-Create, and it's due out early 2021. The album is an experiment in collaboration and co-creation. Stern worked with some pretty incredible Canadian talent on this album, including Michael Hansen of Glass Tiger and Jose Contreras from By Divine Right. The first single off Co-Create is out now, and it's called My Fragile Mind. It's a pretty powerful track, and you can see why the artist has been described as the potential love child of Alanis Morissette and Kurt Cobain. No, I don't know who said that, but it's out there. It is out there. This is My Fragile Mind by The Universe featuring Ray.
A streamer. Merrily, merrily. one ever told me I could lick my heels. I exercise my right to disappear. Oh, I don't care, 'cause mommy and daddy lied, spared my fragile mind. The other side of something real seems so severe. Oh dear. Oh yeah. Please don't spare my fragile mind. Oh, oh. Love you, spare my fragile mind. Again. Oh no. Please don't spare my
The Dirty Nil is a Canadian alt-rock band from Hamilton, Ontario. The band won a Juno for Breakthrough Artist of the Year in 2017. The band consists of Luke Bentham, Ross Miller, and Kyle Fisher. The band has been making music since 2006 and saw some real traction with their 2018 album, Master Volume. The Nil has a new album coming out January 1st, 2021, a date I'm sure we're all looking really forward to. Regardless of how ultimately meaningless any numeric date really is, it's gonna feel so irrationally nice to leave this year behind. Their new album is called Fuck Art. We shared the new track, Doom Boy, on one of the earlier episodes of this show, episode 15, and we've got a brand new one for you today. I mean, it's been out for a little while, but we're gonna play it here for the first time. We're also gonna listen to an interview I did with Luke from The Dirty Nil. So let's do it. I'm here today with Luke from The Dirty Nil. Luke, how's it going, man?
I am feeling swell. How are you, Benjamin?
I am also feeling swell. Thanks for hanging out with me, Luke.
It's my pleasure, Benjamin. Thank you for having me.
Oh, anytime, man. Fuck Art is coming out January 1st, 2021. How are you feeling right now?
I honestly couldn't be feeling better. I am so fucking pumped to put this record out. It's been a hell of a year, as I'm sure we can all agree. But I don't know. There's no real better feeling than having a record in your back pocket. People only heard a couple jams off it. So, I mean, I'm super pumped. We worked real hard on it and I couldn't be more excited.
Nice. Very cool. Doom Boy is doing really well. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that? How are you feeling about Doom Boy?
I'm feeling very, very good about Doom Boy. I mean, that's the first track on the album. It was one of the first songs that we had in the batch of tunes. We started working on all the music for this record at the very beginning of 2019, after we got home from the Master Volume tour. I had a couple of tunes kicking around for us to start kind of jamming on. And just for some context, the way we usually do our songs, where we work on them is, you know, I'll bring in some stuff to work on, but we'll bash it out for about a year, kind of work on each little part of the arrangement so that if it can sound good in our shitbox concrete room of a jam space with a blown out PA system, then we're ready to record it. We don't go into a studio with like an idea, well, maybe if we laid down this, we could layer some stuff. We don't waste our time with that kind of garbage. We are fundamentally of the belief that the work happens in the jam space and the recording studio is for fun. It's to execute it. That is our sacred process, which we will never alter. So Doom Boy is one of those songs that like, basically I had this kind of riff for a while, and it actually predated the Master Volume stuff. And it was going to be a song on Master Volume, but it was clearly the worst song out of all the songs. All the other songs were way better. So we're like, you know, fuck this. And then I recycled the riff, put it in a new key, and then kind of wrote a new chorus. I wrote the Doom Boy chorus. And then that I was really pumped on that chorus. I'm like, this is at least $1,000 chorus. So we can take that to the bank every day. Basically we said, you know, let's try and make kind of a love letter to thrash here. And we started by basically injecting a bunch of different, you know, Metallica and Slayer moves into this song. And it basically, it became this kind of like 4.5 minute, 5 minute song. And it got to the point where it was like, okay guys, we've got to ditch this intro. We got to cut this. We got a third chorus. So we played it live for a a while in this long kind of more, like it was kind of more structured like a Ride the Lightning song or like an early Metallica song where it was really instrumental based. But then, you know, I heard the demo that we did and I was pretty pumped to just kind of trim it up to be more of a banger, you know? Yeah, as I said, we're a kind of old school band that way, where we don't spend a ton of time in the recording studio. It's just we're there to execute, keep the bills low, and get out. You know, we do all the work before we get in there. The best, my favorite Nil songs are the ones where we're in the jam space just making each other laugh, and that's what actually stays on the final version, and that's definitely one of those songs.
Yeah, I gotta ask about the video for Doom Boy.
Well, I have to say a massive shout out to Kyle's dad, Mr. Blair Fisher, who's an expert mechanic, who was able to secure us that Dodge Caravan. So Kyle's dad got us this Dodge Caravan. I think he got it for $600. He said, if you can bring me back the carcass of this vehicle, so like the frame and most of the steel, then I can get you half your money back. So we said we can bring the carcass of this thing back for sure. So with that in mind, we conceptualized the video. And, you know, we have a great time making music videos. We do it all with the same team of people. It's our friend Mitch Barnes from Barn Burner Films, who's kind of in our little psycho cult here of oblivion and madness. When we're kind of getting the songs together, they're finishing being mixed for a record. We kind of plan out the videos. We say, okay, well, for Doom Boy, let's get a Dodge Caravan. A cheap one, and we'll figure out ways of destroying it. And Mitch, what do you think? How could that look? And Mitch will throw us some ideas and we'll say, great. And we really began that working relationship on Master Volume. He helped us do Bathed in Light and That's What Heaven Feels Like, along with his friend Dave Dunham, who did our very first music video, Fucking Up Young, and a bunch of other ones. Dave is kind of somewhat past the hat to Mitch. Mitch is our age, Dave's a bit older. And so Mitch has now become kind of our main video collaborator. And so whenever we need to do some content or anything, we just call up Mitch. And
cool. My next question was just that, how do you guys approach making music videos? But I'm going to augment that question a little bit because you kind of just explained it. How do you guys approach conceptually making music videos? Is that coming a lot from Mitch? Is that coming from you guys?
It kind of depends on the video. Like sometimes what we'll try and do is, like, as I said, like when things are being mixed and we're just kind of getting the whole record together with its artwork and all this stuff, you know, we start planning out which songs are likely going. We talk to our radio team and we talk to our label and we kind of discuss which songs are likely going to be radio songs and thus songs we're probably going to come up with videos for. It's at that point where we kind of just, where we don't come up with the video, like the ideas all at once. Like we're, I think like everything, we work best under pressure. So it'll be like, okay, well, we need a video like released in, you know, 6 weeks. Okay, so let's get some ideas together. And a lot of the time I'll think of a basic idea, because, you know, I write the lyrics. So I'll kind of like maybe come up with an interpretation of the lyrics. Like, what about this, guys? And basically, if we can get everybody energized about an idea, then we start rolling with it. I'll come up with a little bit of something, or Kyle will come up with a little bit of something, or Ross will come up with a little bit of something. And then we'll talk to Mitch about it. And then we'll have a big like kind of conference call where we all start kind of throwing bits at the wall and seeing, like, trying to make each other laugh again, just like our music. It's amazing that this is our job.
Nice.
It's hilarious.
That sounds like a good feeling, man.
It is a good feeling. I mean, everything that we do, we make, as I said, to try and generate some internal excitement and amusement. That's the point of what we do.
Cool. On that note, I think. Can you tell me about the artwork for Fuck Art and Doom Boy?
Most certainly. So all the artwork on this album cycle has been done by a guy named Max. I think his last name is Loeffler. I've never actually said his last name to him for him to correct me. But he's a German fella, and we discovered him, Ross actually found him over Instagram because he had done a Turnstile poster. It was really cool. It was all these flowers. It was really cool. But then we went on his profile, and honestly, his artwork, the stuff that he was doing, was way cooler than even just the artwork that we saw that he had done for Turnstile. He was doing artwork for like for the New York Times and for Newsweek and for, you know, a bunch of really, really big publications, as well as, you know, Scandinavian metal bands. Wow, all over nice. The map. So he's got a very distinct style that kind of in my eyes, kind of marries, you know, 80s Tron like science fiction imagery with kind of with also some really brutal body horror stuff in some of his work. But when Max and I started talking about, you know, what the artwork for Fuck Art would look like, you know, initially it was like this, all this kind of like really dark brooding imagery, and we were discussing all this stuff, and we were both kind of like, yeah, like, you know, maybe this, maybe that, maybe this, maybe that. And then literally, honestly, one time he phoned me in the middle of the night. And remember that Germany is 5-6 hours ahead of us. So he called me. He just couldn't wait. He called me up and I answered the phone. I was like, hello. He's just like, I know what the cover of Fuck Art must be, Luke. And I'm like, what? He's like, it must be a smiling golden retriever dog. What is more Fuck Art than that? And I'm like, honestly, I love it.
That's brilliant. And that's a good, that's a solid German accent.
Thank you. So when he sent over the kind of tester sketch of what that was going to look like, it's a funny feeling with artwork, because it's always like a bit of a nail biting experience, because when you work on your art, on your music, as hard as you do, you know, for like a year of like arguments and, you know, disappointments and feelings and all, you know, all this hopes and dreams and all this stuff, you want to feel the same reciprocation from the visual side, whoever you're working with. You want to feel like your sonic labors are represented properly by the visual element. And you don't know it until you see it, basically. It's not until you see something where all of the sonic stuff makes sense, and to you, you feel like it's an album now. Up until then, it's just kind of a collection of songs, and like, they could be good songs, they could be great songs, it doesn't matter, but they're not, there's no cohesion until there's a visual element in terms of my feeling for things. And so when Max sent over this smiling golden retriever, I almost cried. I was so happy. I'm like, this is exactly what I want to, what I think all of us want to present to the world as a band.
Sure.
And you asked about the Doom Boy dog. I'll just say that.
Is that a Shiba Inu in space?
That's a Shiba Inu with a racing helmet, I believe, but I think it's open to interpretation.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's actually my girlfriend's neighbor's dog. There's a Shiba that would always just snarl at us like through the fence. And so she took a picture of it with her cell phone, and I sent him a picture of that. And he's just like, how about this for the artwork for Doom Boy? And we're like, oh my God,
brilliant.
Yes.
So you guys won a Juno in 2017 for Breakout Group of the Year, but you guys have been working incredibly hard well up until that point, well before you quote broke out, if you will. Can you talk to me about that process of founding the band in like 2006, growing up until you won that breakout prize, and has anything changed since you guys won a Juno?
Sometimes I've thought to myself, man, isn't it crazy that we're still doing the band and all that stuff? But then I just think to myself, no, this is the most normal thing ever. This is the most, like, to me, this is the thing that it's been the most constant thing in my life since I was 16 years old. So in some respects, you know, it feel like you can clock the journey on along different like achievement marks and like that. Well, the things that was definitely a new thing there, and that was a thing that was definitely notable happening there. And but in my experience of it, it's just been one long, it's been so slow that most of the time you don't even really feel the progress. You're just kind of working away on it because it's better than anything else. To me, there certainly seem to be some real landmark moments and releases for us that basically changed things. We formed the band in 2006, and we were basically a two-piece. Kyle and I were so bad at our instruments that no one else would let us like be in their band, and so we're like, well, how about let's start a band together then, as kind of the worst musicians in Dundas, which is a town of about 15,000-20,000 people. The other thing that was different, we wanted to have a band where we wrote our own songs. We didn't want to play covers. We said, okay, we could play covers, but we wanted to write our own songs, basically. That was different because there wasn't really anybody else doing that at our little high school. So when we started doing it, it was kind of like this private us against the world type thing. And then we kind of had a series of bass players and then settled on being a two-piece for a long time, which is why I hate two-pieces now, because I was in a two-piece. And so I just experienced the anxiety of like my pedals breaking and shit whenever I see two-pieces. So it's nothing against two-pieces, but I just have my own battle scars of being a two-piece. And then we played with a guy named Dave Nardi for about 7 years, actually. He was the bass player of our band. He was in the band from the time we were like just leaving our teenage years into our 20s up until the time we were about 26. And over that time, I mean, like it basically went from, you know, our biggest goal was playing a show in Toronto, like, which is, for reference, 40 minutes away. By the time we parted ways with each other, I mean, we were touring the world and we had a record out and we were on a big label in Canada. And I mean, we were men at that time. We were in our basically mid to late 20s. And I also have to say that basically by the time we parted ways with Dave, that our creative relationship together had completely ceased for quite some time. We were basically just, playing the record that we had made basically a couple of years before. We were just playing it live. And we weren't really progressing much as a band together. So we had an adult discussion with each other, and it was we found an amicable course of action. And so then that's when we met Ross. We didn't meet Ross then. We had actually known him for a long time. He had played, our bands had played shows together for many years. And so Ross was actually living in our house. Kyle and I were living together and Ross had moved in. And so Ross was just like, we were auditioning bass players and Ross was coming to the rehearsals to just kind of like intimidate the bass players that were playing, like, and kind of staring at them. And we're like, do you want to be in the band? He's like, yes. So then we just started rehearsing, and that's when we started rehearsing all the master volume material. And I mean, 2017 was a big year for us. We won that Juno. We opened for The Who on my birthday, which is like, you know,
amazing.
Basically my favorite band of all time. And for my 27th birthday, we played with The Who. I met Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey. We played in front of 50,000 people. It was a great day. We toured, we did a lot of touring that year. We went to Europe 3 times. We opened for Against Me for 9 weeks across the States. And then at the beginning of 2018, we recorded Master Volume. And then we toured a lot throughout 2018, toured even more throughout 2019. And then at the beginning of 2020, well, March of this year, we recorded Fuck Art. So as a band, it's funny, we haven't been the most prolific in terms of songs and stuff. We don't, I think part of it is just that we work so steadily on songs. And I mean, I wouldn't say that we're precious with them, but I just think that there's enough okay and unremarkable songs out there. It's just, I'd rather just do our best on every single song that we release, even if it's a raw cacophony of noise. Like, I just don't believe in filler. We work really hard on practicing our music and arranging it together in a small jam space that sounds terrible. And that's kind of our method. And so when we get ready to go to the studio, it's an exciting thing because we've already done the work. It's not like, oh, I wonder how it's going to turn out. We know that this is going to fucking kick ass, basically, by the time we go to the studio.
How is life out in Hamilton these days, A? And how would you say the Hamilton music scene has played a role in the Dirty Nail?
Well, life in Hamilton's lovely right now. I mean, in terms of literally right now, like, I'm looking up at a blue sky. It's great. In the grand scheme of things, it's, you know, it's like everywhere. It's real hurting right now, especially in the music sense. Yeah, but I think that there's nothing really specific to this city that is different from the sufferings and ailments of other municipalities in the Western world right now, or for the entire world for that matter. It's a tough time for everyone. The Hamilton music scene, I would say, the reason why, I mean, there were some great clubs early on for us. The Casbah, which is a lovely place that we still like going to. There's a place called This Ain't Hollywood that actually just closed this year, which was, you know, I saw some of the best, coolest alternative bands. The booker, Lou, he would bring them in. Like, he brought in the Flaming Groovies, which was one of my favorite shows I ever saw. It was amazing. And he would just bring in, you know, Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols and all these really cool, you know, the Stranglers, this great stuff that no one else in Hamilton would ever book. And so that was really awesome. He always paid really well too. So in terms of like the Hamilton music scene, I think the greatest contribution that it made overall was, you know, there's obviously lots of people that helped us out and gave us shows early on, but it was like, it's cheap rent here. I mean, it's changing now for sure, but when we were kids, it was inexpensive to live here, which is not something that can be said of Toronto, which is, you know, quite expensive, yeah. Which is just, you know, 45 minutes away. But it's much easier to be an artist or a musician or whatever you want to call it in Hamilton than it is just down the street. So
you guys have toured. You guys have toured like everywhere. Do you guys, is there a tour memory that stands out to you?
Well, opening for The Who on my birthday was a pretty good one.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat that one, but the Master Volume show, like the Master Volume tour ending in Toronto in the end of 2018 was also a real high point. We basically crammed, like we sold this, we were scared we weren't gonna be able to sell this place out. It's like, I can't remember how much what the cap is, like 1,000 people or something like that. We're like, we never sold 1,000 tickets to anything ever in our lives before, but Master Volume really changed things for us, I will say. We were scared that this thing, you know, there's a lot of tickets, oh no. And then basically 6 weeks out, it was completely sold out and people were hitting us up for more tickets and we nice. Didn't have them. And we just knew it was gonna be a great show. And we crammed about $5,000 worth of cryo jets and like stadium lighting into this tiny venue. It was the very end of a very long and arduous tour for us. Everybody got really sick and like it was extremely aggressively routed. Like we had almost no days off, 8 hours of driving a day. It was fucking tough at certain points. And that's, you know, we've done the Warped Tour and, you know, we've done some really tough tours, but the Master Volume Tour was really intense. So the fact that it was the very end of it, we're ending in Toronto. And, you know, the feeling in the air was just unbelievable in terms of how stoked people were and how crazy they were going. And, you know, we had a full camera crew there and we filmed the whole thing. And, you know, that's in terms of a show that really sticks out to me, the Toronto Master Volume show was excellent.
Are you guys going to take any time off after Fuck Art comes out?
Fuck no.
Nice.
We're gonna go straight back into it. I think we've already got a bunch of new songs, but yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the most in. I know a lot, you know, there's a lot of reasons to despair about this year. There's a lot of bad shit that's happened, and obviously, like everybody is concerned about their loved ones, just like me. And but as I'd say, as like the musician and as the leader of my band, I've never felt more engaged. And energized and excited to work that I do right now, just because things are so chaotic and strange that it just makes it exciting every single day. This is the first time since I was 23 years old where I wasn't in a van for 8 months out of the year. And that's an extremely refreshing thing that's, you know, allowed me to live my life in a new kind of way. Of course I miss playing shows, of course, but traditionally we would, you know, bang our heads against the wall for a year, work out an album, record it, and then just like get into touring mode and tour for a year and, you know, not really think too much about new music. And I mean, personally, I'm taking responsibility for that. I would just kind of get into, okay, how do I get myself in good shape so I can sing every night and do all this stuff? But this year, that hasn't been really a consideration. It's been, we just went from the last recording the thing to just like, okay, now let's make more music. And not only that, let's make more music that has no deadlines or anything. We're just making it for ourselves. We have some time to explore and figure out what we're excited by rather than any kind of external deadlines of making a record. And that's not to say that I don't think deadlines are a good thing, for sure. I think it makes you cut through the garbage and just get the biscuit in the basket, which is important in the world of art. You can just kind of, well, what if this? Well, what if that? Well, it needs to get done, so yeah, pick something forever. And keep moving. But there is certainly a nice, I really do enjoy the luxury of having of just getting to play guitar. Like, this is the first time where I felt like I could just play guitar like a teenager again, and I'm not on the clock and I don't have a deadline to produce by or anything like that. I'm trying to make myself happy, and that's a beautiful feeling.
So in regards to the name of the album, What did art ever do to you?
Art took my life, dude. No, I'm kidding. So the name of the album basically came because for Christmas last year, Christmas 2019, my mom got me and my sister's painting lessons at the community center with her. Awesome. And I'm like, fuck this. This is going to suck. But I was like, you know what? I'll keep an open mind. I haven't painted since I was like a teenager. And, you know, I've kind of separated in my mind, like, you know, rock and roll from art. You know, it's like, I'm not an artist. I play rock and roll. That's kind of how I had it in my mind. But then we started painting. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. Like, I'm really enjoying this. We had a really good instructor, and we had a bunch of, it was basically us and a bunch of senior citizens. And there was this one really crotchety older gentleman whose name shall conceal for reasons that will soon be evident, was just a complete whiner the whole time and kept shooting his arm up like a six-year-old in kindergarten, like, my painting doesn't look like that, and my paintbrush is getting bristles stuck in the page. And the instructor was very patient and, you know, wait until it's done, you know, and then you can pick them out. It's all good. It's all good. And then just got to the point where she said, okay, listen, just finish your goddamn painting and we'll I'll answer all your questions at the end. But everybody's trying to do their painting, okay? And so he puts his hand down and he just mutters from the back of the room. He's like, fuck art. And I just said, boom, that's the title of the next record. So I told the guys in the band at one of our only shows this year, we were playing at Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And I told the guys this story, and everybody just howled laughing. And we'd had a couple barley sodas, so we were howling even more. We kind of just like looked at each other with that insane look. And of all nights, our accountant actually was there, who's, you know, as you'd imagine, a pretty conservative fella, but he was howling too. And our manager was there and he was howling. So we were all just howling, and it just became clear, like, should we call our album this? And there was a couple people in our band, or maybe one guy in our band was like, no, we can't do it. We can't do it. But over time we're like, no, it's gotta be this, man. It's hilarious. So anyways, we got everyone on board and we said to our label, we're calling our album Fuck Art. And they said, okay. But anyways, to me, the whole title, you know, on first glance, it looks negative. It looks fairly nihilistic. But to me, nothing could be further from the truth. It's you can't say it without smiling. You know, even my conservative grandmother can't say it without smiling. To me, it's just a very optimistic title of just like, there's nothing really matters in the world of art. Like, people taking things way too seriously, especially in the world of rock and roll. Like,
have you by any chance seen the news or like the trending on Twitter situation today with aliens?
No, I've been moving.
Yeah, oh, you've been moving. Okay, today. Cool.
Yeah.
So
enlighten me.
So the former head of the Israeli space organization, who's apparently fairly credible, and this has been picked up by Daily Wire and the New York Post and whatnot, has said that both Israel and the U.S. have been in contact with aliens, specifically a galactic federation, and that we have bases on Mars. And I just wanted to know, what does Luke from the Dirty Nil think about that?
Well, you know, I'd like to go play for the Martian troops whenever we possibly could.
Right?
Yeah.
We are going to be listening to Done With Drugs. Can you tell us anything about that song before we listen to it?
Don't
are you done with drugs?
No. It depends what drugs. I mean, like, some drugs, yes, I'm done. I'm now 30 years old. I've reasonably said, okay, I've had my fun with that. That's done. But I mean, coffee? No, I love coffee. And, you know, I'll always love marijuana. Yeah, I mean, you know, drugs are a personal choice, and I'm fascinated by people's personal choices. I mean, personal choices when they make them public. And I studied drugs and behavior in university, and that's, I think, probably why I'm really fascinated by them. But and not necessarily drugs themselves. Drugs are just chemicals, but the things, the people's relationships with them and their public relationships with them. Let me kind of clarify that a little further. In today's social media era, which is I don't need to give you any critique or commentary on social media. I think everybody's well aware of the poison and garbage that we currently inhabit. What I would say about it is I'm fascinated by people oversharing like private information on the internet. Like, why do people fucking say these things on the internet? I just don't get it. And that's your own personal decision. Go ahead. If you want to air out your personal dirty laundry and I'm trying to give up, this and I'm done with this thing and I'm making my big long 6-paragraph post about it. I just don't understand why people can't just be like, okay, I want to get rid of this from my life. I'm going to do it. Rather than appealing to the public forum to say you're done with pornography or whatever it is that is one of your vices. We all have vices. It's part of being an animal. That song, lyrically at least, is more about... It's funny because it's been interpreted as my confessional of how I'm giving up drugs. It's not that at all. What it is it is kind of the aggregation of all of these Facebook and Instagram, these big, long personal statements about their pledges. I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And I'm like, that's all well and fine, but why does this have to be a public thing? That's what that song is about.
Okay,
right. And a little bit of it's just more of an observation.
So before we go, where can we find out more about The Dirty Nail? Where can we find your socials? Anything you want to plug on that end?
We have a fire ass Instagram and, we're on Facebook and Twitter. I think social media is pure evil and garbage, but it's all about it's all about viewing the whole thing. Once you accept that it's a con and the game is rigged, then it becomes fun. With that in mind, our Instagram is pure fire. So come check it out and listen to us on all of the, thieving streaming platforms. And we would encourage you to buy one of our records or a t-shirt or something and support us, but we appreciate any kind of support for that matter. So thank you very much for listening to The Nil, and hail, hail, rock and roll.
Awesome. Well, we're gonna listen to Done With Drugs. Luke from The Dirty Nil, thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome, man. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Dirty Nil, Done With Drugs.
But now I've got
That's a great track. I definitely think drugs are not done with me. Thanks again for hanging out, Luke from the Dirty Nil. And stay tuned for Fuck Art coming January 1st, 2021. We will keep an eye out for that. Coleman Hell. Coleman Hell is synonymous with some big songs like Two Heads and Fireproof, both released on Columbia Records, both of which did very well in the charts worldwide. The artist is back with a new track, this time on independent Vancouver label 604 Records. There's a lot of interesting indie tidbits around this artist, most notably that he's one of the founders of a Toronto music collective called Sideways. Check them out on Instagram at sideways.gang. I don't often share big artists like Coleman Hell on the show, but considering the track did just come out and it's just on 604 Records at the moment, so I'm gonna consider it an indie release. I wanna also draw a little bit of attention over to Sideways because we're gonna keep an eye on those guys and we're gonna try and take a closer look at some of their other artists in an upcoming show. So yeah, this is the new one by Coleman Hell. This is Come Over.
Tell me about your problems. Everybody's got one or two. A sister who went crazy. A brother you ain't talking to.
And your mama ain't right. Heard your daddy's gone now. But you never think twice about the problems they had. I just called to say come over if it's not too late. Hey, I just called to say come over if it's not too late. Hey. Your problems. Everybody's got some excuse. A son who never calls you. A friend that you ain't talking to.
And your mama ain't right. Heard your daddy's gone now. But you never think twice.
Just call to say, come over if it's not too late. Hey, I just call to say, come over if it's not too late. Hey.
That is it for the show this week, all you awesome folks. Have an incredible week, and don't forget to do your part to help us all get into the Galactic Federation. Maybe recycle more, call your mom more, help end poverty, climate change, and racial injustice. I mean, maybe 2020 has just lit a fire under our collective asses on some of this stuff. Maybe we're on the way, people. Let's keep up the love. Keep taking care of each other. Keep fighting for what's right. And on that note, we're heading into winter. There is an estimated 10,000 to 14,000 people homeless in Toronto right now. There are over 120 encampments in Toronto right now. And that's a pretty conservative estimation, if you ask me, as somebody who walks around outside, I certainly don't have all the solutions to the housing crisis. All I can do is just encourage you to get involved, and maybe even if you have the money, make a donation to a group like Toronto's Fred Victor or to the United Way. Figure out what is the right group in your city. This is pretty messed up all over the place, and it's getting cold out. It's getting cold out in this country. Basic housing is a human right, and we should probably figure that one out pretty soon. I'm your host, Ben in Toronto. Dropout is licensed to play through SoCan. Remember to support your favorite artists with merch and stuff. It's a great way to get money to an artist. It's a great way to support music websites, too. Check out some of our merch if you're down on dropoutentertainment.ca. All of the profits from band merch are still going straight to the bands, and any profits from Dropout branded merch goes straight to support the site and shows like this one. And we've got some cool shows. We've got some cool stuff coming in the new year, so stay tuned in. We will be back next week. Don't forget, nominations are still open at dropoutentertainment.ca for the 3rd annual Canadian Independent Music Video Awards. They are open until December 15th. So you have a hot tip on a Canadian music video released in 2020, let us know about it. And now back to real Canadian independent music. This is Dropout Radio.